remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's Competition, Consumer Trust and Consumer Choice Drafting Team call on Tuesday, the 14th of February, we have Olivier Crétin-Leblanc, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Carlos Aguirre, Tobias Mahler, Steve Del Bianco, Rosemary Sinclair, Eve Evan Labovich. From staff, we have Paul Redmond, Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, and myself, Gisela Gruber. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. We have apologies noted today from Jonathan Zook. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Rosemary.
Thanks, Gisela. We've got our agenda before us. Roll call is done. The only action item that we've got is the one on diversity. I spoke to my colleagues, but as I said, the person who's very focused on this is not back till the end of February. So I went and just had a look through some economic sites to see if I could understand better this concept, and I shot that one around to everybody. My own view at the moment is that getting into the statistics on measuring diversity in competitive markets is probably a bridge too far for our purposes. It's quite a complicated field, and I'm just not sure we need to go there. When I looked at the literature, what the diversity measure looks at is the difference in the sorts of companies that come into a market on the supply side, the range of products that are offered in that market, and the diversity of consumers, in the broader sense, in a market on the demand side. And when I thought about that, I thought that we've covered quite a bit of that, understanding the registrars and registry operators. We've got a few measures around that area. The whole purpose of the GTLD program was to improve diversity in the language of this context that I'm currently discussing. So as we see the new GTLDs emerge, we could measure that in terms of the numbers and sorts of GTLDs that do emerge. On the other side, I'm not sure how we would measure diversity among the consumers, except to say that we already have quite a diverse consumer community for domain names already, and I wouldn't have expected that to change. So that's the background that I've got so far, and it's a question, I guess, for this group, now that we've got at least that much information, how far do we want to take it in our present piece of work, which is directed to getting our material out for public comment and our presentation to Costa Rica. Oh. Me? Hello?
Sorry, now we'll look into that, Rosemary. Sorry.
Okay, fine. So how far do we want to take it? We've got enough, I think, to now say something in our discussion paper and presentation. And whether we want to then get into the matter of statistical measures for this issue, this metric, I'm not sure that, as I say, that seemed a bit too far for us.
Rosemary, if I could get in on that?
Yes.
Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, thanks. It's Steve. On the bottom of page 10, we kind of explored this extensively last week. And
yeah.
I know you're on the part where figuring out whether we can come up with a single statistical measure of diversity. But on last week, at the bottom of page 10, we did sort of describe the measure of diversity, geographic diversity, and only the registrants. We didn't do users.
Yeah.
We talked about where it would come from, zones, and who is data. And we said that the difficulty was at the level of doubtful because we needed a measure of geographic diversity.
Mm.
So all that plays right into what you said.
Yes.
But even if we don't come up with a single magical measure of diversity, a 0-1 index or whatever it is,
yeah,
it looked like we put in there that the target we said was that diversity should be greater than it was in legacy TLDs, and that
yes,
it should increase over time, say from year 2 to year 3.
Yes.
I find myself reading that thinking, yeah, this sounds pretty sensible.
Yes.
You know, if the domain name system expansion brings more people from more parts of the world into registered domain names, we probably will have done something to further the cause of consumer choice. So I found that I feel like that little row at the bottom of page 10 looks pretty reasonable. All that about it is difficult is how one measures diversity.
Mm.
And so if we lack a single statistical measure,
mm,
is it worth putting it to the community to say, we welcome suggestions on an index valuation or other statistical measure of diversity?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of us taking the row out, we find a way of asking for input from the greater community. Thank you.
Any other thoughts on, look, I can see hands now. Oh, I can see ticks now. So that's a tick from Cheryl and a tick from Olivier and a tick from Rosemary. Are there any other comments on that from Steve? I think that's a good way forward myself. Not seeing any hands, Steve. I think your suggestion is good, that we leave that there and see if there's someone in the community that has a thought about a single measure. Otherwise, I guess it's a narrative where we're noting the various countries that people are coming from.
So this is John Berard. May I jump in?
Oh, sure, John.
So do we want to ask for the designation of a metric that already does or will exist, or do we want to say either that does or can be created? Because creating additional data collection may be seen by some as unnecessary or burdensome, and I guess feedback on those two points might be helpful from the community.
John, it's Steve. If I might, we suggested that the source of the data was zone and who is data, and the statistical measure that we spoke of is some sort of an index value. It's weighted by the quantity of registrants from different geographical regions, and presumably that's a formula. So it's not a data collection job once we have a statistical measure. The data collection job is to say that what's the quantity of registrants we have from every country in the world. And that would be an automated pass through the thick Whois zone data. You'd have to disregard, as our note says, any registration using a privacy and proxy would have to be discarded because it would not provide meaningful data. So we're under the assumption that this could be done with an automated pass of the zones. And it's a separate matter as to how one takes that data and massages it into a single index if one can be discovered. If it can't, you have to do what Rosemary said. You have a narrative that says that before the expansion, there was representation from all countries of the world in the legacy TLDs. After expansion, there's a greater amount of representation from all the countries in the world. It won't be a very interesting story to tell without a statistical measure. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Yes, and I guess the philosophy that we've adopted, John, is to try to use existing sources of data and existing reporting, so not to create extra layers of activities for people, but rather to source the data and look at it and see what it means.
So I agree. I'm on board with that being the appropriate the best way to go, the
mm-hmm.
best first step forward.
Yep, yep. And there are a couple of areas in our suggested tables of measures that we've suggested need a survey, and it will be just up to discussion and priorities whether those go forward, but only a couple. So, all right, any more discussion on that point? Evan.
Hi, it's Evan. I got my hand up.
Yep.
Sorry. There's also one possible other metric to deal in the Are we still talking about the geographical diversity component?
Yes, we are.
Okay. There's one other thing. If a community application comes in that says, as part of our community application, we are going to limit ourselves to this geographic distribution. So let's say it's a city TLD or geographic TLD or a cultural TLD where most of the cultural resides in a well-defined geographic area. I mean, to me, that's also a metric that can be used by looking at the policies of the registries themselves in the application they put forward. Is their application, is their target market constrained geographically? If somebody's putting forward to, you know, dot Wales, you know, maybe it's open to expatriates, but if a community application says we're only accepting registrants who have a proof of residency in a specific area, that's also a measure of geographic diversity. I'm just saying that's part of this. That's not in necessarily in zone and who is that. It's part of the policy of the registry.
Yes. So to capture that, we would then have to include as a source of data registry policy.
I'm just suggesting that might be worthwhile.
Okay. Are there any thoughts on that, Steve?
Thank you. What Evan commented on is not relevant to the row we have in here now, and I think he's suggesting considering a different kind of diversity, which is the self-imposed geographical restrictions of registries. This row that we have on the bottom of page 10 is a different row because it would look in the aggregate at the total new GTLD space, and it wouldn't care if some of those GTLDs self-imposed the geographical restrictions. It would be looking at an aggregate measure of geographical diversity. So Evan, I don't think it changes what we have on the page here. It potentially adds another row. And how would you articulate that? We'd say that a measure of...
I wouldn't add in another row. I would add in the second column of sources of data, zone and who is data, comma, registry policies.
But Evan, the registry policies wouldn't be relevant to an aggregate view of where the registrants in the new GTLD space have come from. Because it'll be an observed, not an a priori restriction by a registry. We just simply pass through all the zones and say, what's the representation by registrants? And you're right, a few of the zones may be...
But that
all gets lost in the aggregate data.
I'm just taking the line item at face value. Measure the increased geographic diversity of registrants. And I'm just saying, to me, just taking that line at face value, there were other ways to measure.
Okay, so we need to change the line then. So it should say, measure the increased geographical diversity of registrants in the sum of all new GTLDs. Because that was what the original proposer of this measure had in mind. It was Annelise Roger at the Dakar meeting. So it was an aggregate, not necessarily looking at whether we were going to get applicants who would self-impose geographical restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
So if we correct the measure description, then it doesn't lead to the need to look at the registry restriction. But I'm not discarding the kernel of your thought, because it may be that there's a different measure of geographical diversity where you only have to look at the registry's restrictions, which is a relatively easy thing to do.
That's what I thought.
Right. So while it's easy, it's not instructive on this row. The question is, do we want to invent another measure?
God, if I'm the only one that wants it, I won't press the issue.
Okay. Well, I guess what you're hearing, Evan, is our hesitation about more measures given the number that we've got. So I think perhaps if it's okay with you, we'll just leave things the way they are, but it may be that it comes out in the public comments or perhaps in the discussion in Costa Rica as now that we've done this amount of work on diversity, it may be that issue gets discussed further and we come back to that. But if you're okay, Evan,
we'll... My notes at this point say that on this particular one at the bottom of page 10, just to put this to bed now, is that change the measure of consumer choice to indicate all new GTLDs. So it's clear that we mean an aggregate.
Yeah.
And then where we say the anticipated difficulties, uh-huh, I'll leave the word doubtful, and I'll follow it by this. The working group is seeking an index or other statistical method of representing geographic diversity.
Yes. Everyone comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Evan. Now, back to action items, I think. Barry had one which is complete. The next one, Barry, is with you, and it's started. Would you like to give us an update?
Yes. Thank you, Rosemary. This is Barry for the record. The first one was basically in our from our call last week, and when we get into the stats under or the measures under competition and about how the number of TLDs that are counted, the number of registry operators, et cetera, there was discussion about whether ICANN collects the zone files from the existing registries and if any analysis is performed against those. I did collaborate with the registry services team, and first and foremost, they have started downloading zone files on a weekly basis since November of 2009, and it's on a daily basis since November of last year. Then, if so, was there any analysis performed against those zone files? Basically, they're only performed on an ad hoc basis or as demand dictates. There's no regularly or periodically scheduled analysis performed against those zone files currently. Also, per our conversation last week, we were referring to the .xx sunrise period, in which ICANN has been downloading the zone files since they were delegated. In a general example, they just mentioned that they did work with the ICANN registry to solve some issues that were spotted within the zone file. So basically to keep closure or take closure on this with respect to some of the metrics that we're going to be talking about here, ICANN is actively collecting the zones and is capable of doing an analysis on some of the aspects that we create out of the metric series. As for the second action item, there was also an ask if there was anything required in the applicant guidebook that states that registries have to post the conditions of their registration on their own website, or in particular registrars that would be selling the second level domain. I see in this latest version that Steve has added these as individual metrics that we'll review in a minute. My first pass through the guidebook, I didn't find any language that dictates that a registry must post the conditions of their registration. However, I don't see how they couldn't do it, whether it was in the guidebook or not, because it is part of how those domains are registered, and it's they didn't follow the guidelines that they've established in their applications, and that would basically pull them out of terms in their registry agreement. So I kept on keeping this one open. I want to do some more analysis and review the guidebook. So that's all for me. Thank you.
Barry, this is Steve. As a follow-up, you were speaking of the measures on page 9 under consumer choice, and where we assessed it as being moderately difficult to audit their display, and we said that all registries should disclose. But I think you've said that, as strange as it seems, there doesn't seem to be an ironclad legal requirement that they disclose their registration restrictions. And you're going to continue to look for that. But even if you don't find it, we may still say that a goal for the program when it comes to transparency of choice is that they ought to disclose, even if it isn't legally required. Is that about right?
Agreed. And the latest and greatest example is the XXX top-level domain on ICM registry site. They do a very good job. they do a very good job of posting what the conditions of membership are. They walk the potential registrant through their membership process and everything along those lines, and everything's clearly stated what conditions exist and when what would happen if to their registration if they're a member versus a non-member. So I really can't imagine any future registry that was shaped something like the closeness of a XXX that they wouldn't be able to survive without posting those conditions.
Barry, probably a lot of us on this call right away went to the browser to try to find that page. Is it under icmregistry.com somewhere? Under icmregistry.com/about.
Yes, and it's specifically under the frequently asked questions. I think the first one is how do I apply for membership? Or wait, no, it's not that one.
Who can register? Third question down.
Figures that you would ask me on the fly like this. I just so we don't waste time, I'll send it out to the list. And the one page that I'm looking for, there's a nice little video that basically walks the registrant through what it's like to become a member, and I'll make sure I post the various examples.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to load a XXX video here at the office.
You might have to go into a dark corner, Steve.
True enough. But, Barry, I was asking not to put you on the spot. I'm sorry. I was hoping that all of us on the call would have a real-world example of registry restrictions and how they're disclosed. And I think a lot of people think ICM has done a really good job, and yet it isn't sort of glaring at you from the home page. It's on the registry operators page, which doesn't even have XXX in the domain name in the URL, and it's actually findable under things like About and the FAQ. So we do have to sort of be specific about the kind of disclosure we're looking for. I think we would judge the ICM registry's XXX disclosure to be adequate, speaking for myself. And if so, let's make sure that when we write our measure down, that it ought to be knowing the reality here. So it should not have to be on the front page. It just has to be easily accessible to a potential registrant.
Yes, I think that's
important. I posted one URL into the chat, and here's the second one that I'm referring to.
Right. Well, Rosemary, here, that seems to provide good guidelines about the clarity and the relatively simple language that's needed to make this really an effective process. So if we can.
Do the folks on the call want to cite that URL as an example under the three-year target for our measures on page 9?
I think it's a good idea to include it as an example.
This is John.
There are others. It's not just ICM. .arrow, .travel, they all have their own restrictions.
John?
So I like the idea of pointing at the ICM approach.
Okay, well, I think, Steve, if you can, and Cheryl's good with that too, if you could make that change, that would be great.
Got it.
Okay. So you're finished, Barry, on that point, is that right?
Yes, I am. And I take that back. Just to point out, right below the open action items, you'll see our schedule up through the remainder of May. And just keep in mind that we've got two sessions scheduled before the Costa Rica meeting to prepare for a public session. And back to you, Rosemary. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. That was very helpful to put that schedule out. And I think just including it in the action items is a good reminder for all of us.
Right. So now that takes us back to our review, and we are in the competition area. On what page are we on?
Rosemary, it's Steve. Would everyone just take a moment and scan the consumer choice? We made substantive changes to it, and I want to be sure that I didn't mess it up the way I translated all of the discussion last week into our table.
Okay. Would you mind just walking us through that, Steve? I always find that very helpful.
I'll try to do it very quickly. Under consumer choice, my notes revealed that we split disclosure and clarity for purposes of letting registrants and users make meaningful distinctions. We felt much better about disclosure, the first row up there, and we did realize that we had a tough time on clarity. So one row in the old table became three.
Yeah.
Registry disclosure, registrar disclosure, and the third was clarity, which would come from both registries and registrars. Unless there's further work on this, or Wendy Seltzer, the originator of the idea, unless she can come up with some helpful guidance here, this may be something that is not measurable in a quantifiable way. First, speaking my opinion only, I don't know how we can keep clarity without adding some more guidance as to how it can be measured. I think we look foolish for suggesting something that's so nebulous.
Although, Steve, Rosemary here, we now have the simple question of, does it look like the ICM disclosure?
Good point. But even if somebody said, yes, it does, no, it doesn't, that's not quantifiable either, right?
Well,
so I'm happy to take any input on that. Is there a group on the call today that wants to keep this around for further discussion, or is there a move to delete the clarity line? It's the third row on page 9.
Rosemary here, I actually like having the clarity in there, Steve, but it comes from my years of dabbling around in the mobile phone area, trying to understand the terms and conditions that are absolutely disclosed in 2 or 3 inches of fine print at the bottom of every advertisement about a mobile phone package. So I'm very keen on this clarity measure, and even if we haven't got a quantifiable measure like most of our others, this one lends itself to some benchmark of good practice, and I know that's not very helpful in the schema that we've developed, but the difference is transparency can say, yes, I can see 3 inches of small print at the bottom of the advertisement, but no, I don't, not clear to me, I don't understand what it's saying. So the distinction between these measures, I feel, is really very important, even if we have a problem with a simple quantifiable metric of performance. Are there other views on that? And perhaps
it's like we keep it, and I'll add to the measure that, e.g., must be understandable to average registrant, something like that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. It's kind of a norm reference measure, isn't it?
All right, then the next section under choice, we created two measures that are part of the range of options available to a registrant and a user in terms of the scripts and national laws, meaning that registrants and users have choices among scripts other than Latin, and I put in brackets languages other than English.
Yes.
I want to discuss that with you all. And the other one was quantity of national laws, different national legal regimes. Turning to the languages other than English, TLDs are either in Latin or they're in an IDN script, even after the expansion. But there isn't a necessity to delineate what language a word is. Dot bank, is that English or is it German, et cetera. So I don't know that it's appropriate to have language in there or not. Does it make things clear, or does it create a problem for us to keep languages other than English on this row?
Rosemary, just jumping in, I think it creates a problem, and I wonder if we should, rather than saying other than Latin, we actually are more positive and call out IDN scripts.
So you would say quantity of new GTLD registries using IDN scripts, is that correct?
Yes, I think that's the core that we're after. Other than Latin, still sort of has Latin as the centerpiece, whereas if we go for what we want, which is IDN scripts, put that in the measure, and I think the language one, the suggestion about the language is confusing. Are there other thoughts on that? Cheryl, would you mind just explaining the point in the chat?
Cheryl, for the transcript record, the bird chorus is very loud here, so I've been on mute. No, I think saying quantity of new GTLD registries using IDN scripts does set the measure quite well, but I think we also need to note that we need a baseline measure, like right now, because we have the fast track for CCTLD, and what we're measuring here is GTLD, so we might need to be a little bit specific or make sure that we have the measure that is inclusive of CCTLD as we have in other parts of these tables. Thank you.
Cheryl, this is Steve. I mean, we did make the decision last week that where appropriate,
yep,
where CCs compete head-to-head with Gs, that we
and
reference
this,
all of them and not just the Gs. Is this a candidate for that?
Yeah, this is one of those times where I think it would be a head-to-head competition, and we should be doing the full measure if we're going to line it up that way, yep.
If I were to repeat, the way Cheryl seems to have worded it is it would say quantity of new TLD registries.
Correct.
Using IDN scripts, period.
Yep.
And the measure target would be the number of IDNs in new TLDs greater than the TLDs of place in 2011.
Well, could be the choices in legacy TLDs, because the legacy TLDs takes into account the already established fast-track CCTLDs.
Great point. Taking out the G, exactly.
Yep.
Is everyone on the call okay with removing the G from this row? And Rosemary's point of word it positively, as in using IDN scripts?
Yep.
And it looks as if we are also going to drop the languages other than English, because in Latin script, there are occasionally going to be multiple TLDs for the same travel. Dot travel might come up with their own dot voyage. It would not be IDN, but it would be a French language translation of the word travel.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how many examples of that we're going to have.
Yeah.
Is there an interest in trying to capture that as a measure of choice?
Good question.
Very interesting point, Steve.
Yeah, no, I'm tempted to say yes on that. That was Cheryl for the record.
Yes, no, and
it's not just Latin either. There could be an IDN script like traditional Chinese where there are two or three different languages using the same script.
Mm.
Let me give you another example. Farsi uses Arabic
and language diversity.
So does Arabic. So if we had a Farsi and an Arabic TLD, that is really two parts of choice, even though they're using the same script.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would count as two if they both launched because they're both IDNs. All we would miss with this simplified measure is we would miss Latin-scripted, non-English new TLDs. They wouldn't make it into the numerator when we count the quantity.
But they would if we did include a measure for language diversity as well.
Well, if we said the words at the end and languages other than English.
Yeah, that's right.
Quantity of new TLD registries using IDN scripts or languages other than English.
Yes, Rosemary here. I think that's good. And so does Olivier.
Yep.
He's given you a tick. Yes, no, I think that is good because we wouldn't want to miss out on those other DGLDs. Okay.
Everybody's good now. Reread it then. It says quantity of new TLD registries using IDN scripts or languages other than English.
Yep. Yep.
Is the background noise from my phone too much for the rest of you?
No, I don't think so, Cheryl.
Okay. It's bellbirds, and you know they can cut into some technology.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I think well behaved at the moment.
Okay.
All right, so let's move to the bottom row on page 9. It's the it's a measure of how registrants and users can choose domain names in TLDs that are governed by different legal regimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that a registry could choose TLDs where they know there's lots of disclosure on who is, and other registrants might choose TLDs where the privacy laws are more protective of the privacy of registrants. Wendy Seltzer had come up with this several weeks ago as a measure of choice. Do you think that the way it's worded is what we're after?
Legal regimes where UGTLD registries are safe. I think it captures the issue, Steve. It's Rosemary here. Hmm. Are there any other thoughts on this one?
That's fine. Just with your, I know you haven't got to the measure yet, Steve, but the measure of number of choices greater than two.
Right, so that if there were more than two choices, because...
Ah, okay, thank you. Sorry, took me a moment.
If you grouped all the Western democracies together and said their laws were similar, maybe the European Union and the U.S. are different, you end up with a fewer number, a fewer categories. The categories do make this complex. Jonathan Robinson brought it up on the last call.
Yeah.
That the easy measure is to just simply count the number of legal regimes to which TLD registries claim they are subject to their law. And even if the U.S. and Canada were two different regimes for two different TLDs, they would count as two different choices. And the regimes are somewhat different. So there is an argument that says that keep the easy and drop the moderate when it comes to the difficulty in terms of categorization. Does anybody want to keep the categorization by grouping into similar legal regimes?
You know, this is Cheryl for the record. I'd be happy to have both listed for the public discussion,
mm-hmm.
but can we make sure that it's seen as alternates? I just think we need to pull that out as we're doing the presentation. Almost force the community to guide the hand there? Because I think there will be entirely different views in different parts of ICANN. We almost need to poll that.
What is the likelihood we will discover multiple nations having national laws that are similar enough for the purposes of a registrant?
And highly restrictive ones.
Would have to pay a lawyer to assess whether England and Ireland have sufficiently similar that they would be counted as the same choice.
Is there no harmonization aims in terms of European EU?
The European Privacy Directive was only implemented by a third of the European nations.
Okay. So it's highly recommended and not compulsory.
With respect to the privacy directive, it wasn't. There will be a new privacy regulation coming out next year that will have a different regime associated with it. And we're only speaking of the nations of Europe. I honestly want to try to keep this simple so that this doesn't turn into a long conversation in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And
Rosemary, Steve, I guess I'm favoring the first. If each nation is counted as a separate legal regime. If I go right down to the consumer end of this, then I think that's the way people would look at this. But if I'm in a particular country, I'm getting this legal regime. If I'm in some other country, I'm getting some other legal regime. And if there's a sort of, you know, core of Westminster or continental law in the middle of it, I think the first option of counting the nations as separate legal regimes is the way to go on this one. I'm not, and of course, when this goes out for comment, we may have some GAC members that provide some guidance here. Hmm. Anyone else wanting to comment on this one? I think the discussion, and Olivia's come in into the chat, referencing national level. Any other thoughts on this one?
There was an element of complexity that Jonathan Robinson brought up with respect to suitable PLDs. If I want to run a banking website, and I can only choose between .bank and .finance, and they're both under U.S. law, then is it really two choices? Maybe not. Maybe it's only one choice because there's only two that are suitable. We brought that up, and I didn't put it in the document because we were unable to get the consensus last week, as far as I could tell, about whether it was even going to be possible to ascertain and group TLDs together in terms of their similarity of purpose.
Rosemary, it's a really tricky one because it depends on, you know, what the users are looking for. .bank could be about deposits and .finance could be about, you know, long-term superannuation strategy or car loans or something.
Almost identical.
Yeah, or the other way. I still think that one is a bit difficult. Any other thoughts on that particular issue? If not, Steve, I think we might leave it the way it is. Are you comfortable with that?
Rosemary, I still feel as if the moderate difficulty of grouping by legal regimes, it'd be my bid to remove that.
Yes,
unless somebody felt strongly about keeping it.
I'm supporting that removal.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Is there any other view on that, removing the moderate difficulty sentence?
Yeah, if it removes that, then it just goes to number of choices in new TLD choice in new GTLD choices is greater than choices in legacy TLDs, correct?
That's right.
Aye.
Okay, well, I think silence is taking you in the direction of removing moderate difficulty, Steve.
Thank you. All right, so real quick, turning to the next page, we have three measures of consumer choice that get to the question of whether the choices are real choices or are they just defensive purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And we added the note up at the top of that page saying that privacy and proxy registrations will not provide meaningful data. We came up with, this was largely with the help of Jonathan Robinson, Jonathan Zook, came up with measures of consumer choice, looking at sunrise and post-sunrise period, on the assumption that during sunrise they're presumed to be mainly for defensive purposes. So I'll just be quiet for a second and give you guys a chance to read these three rows and how I've captured last week's discussion, see if you see anything that we need to change.
Could I just ask, can everybody see the screen? Is everybody on Adobe Connect?
So if there's no questions, then I won't walk through all the details. This was a pretty extensive rework of the defensive registration. But if we're feeling good about this, it will contribute to making the competition section easier.
Yeah.
Because we are getting at the notion of who is a new registrar. Like the survey, for instance.
Rosemary here. I think very good way, Steve, of pulling out an issue that's been very significant for people in this whole process.
Thank you. What should we put as the anticipated difficulty for the survey?
To be honest, I feel that any time we put a survey in, we ought to say that it's difficult because it requires quite a bit of work, even if it is an online survey, in terms of developing the questions and setting it up.
I disagree.
Agree, Cheryl?
No, I disagree with you, Rosemary.
Yep. Okay, go.
I think online. I think surveys are the simplest thing from an ICANN perspective, because if they have the staff bandwidth to do so, that they will use existing tools, Survey Monkeys and whatever that they already have, and they have staff with sufficient skill sets running surveys within community that know how to phrase an appropriate question. And if they don't and they're outsourcing it, many of the providers that ICANN already has contracted for tools such as the Big Pulse have specific expertise on marketing surveys that we already have contractual relationships with people, like, as I say, Big Pulse. One comes immediately to mind. So I think the only difficulty is throwing money at it.
Yes. So difficult, moderate, easy? What do you think of the hard? On.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, no, I take all those comments on board. I was really talking, you know, about a process of agreeing questions and so on, but that's just my perspective. So do you want to put easy in there or moderate or...?
Why don't we use the obtainable?
Okay, good.
Using either in internal or outsourced resources and expertise.
Okay, I think that's a good way of phrasing it. Any other... and Steve,
this is Steve. I wanted to at least be consistent, because if you recall back on page 7, we said that a survey was going to be the source of our perceived consumer trust in the DNS. On there, we indicated moderate difficulty to gain consensus on survey questions, and we also noted that survey cost is approximately $100,000. If we were comfortable with saying it about that survey, it's possible we just copy that into here.
Yes, you like. It doesn't indicate
Because $100,000 isn't difficult, it's just money.
That's right.
And I do think that an online survey, maybe we ought to be more clear. Do we mean a push-pull or a self-selected survey?
Well, this is a sample survey. This is a sample survey of registrants. This is a targeted...
Right, to be a sample, then we have to push it so that the statistically significant sample is pre-selected.
Right.
Okay, great. So it's a push. Even if it is online, it's a push-pull.
Yes.
Great.
Olivier wants to come into this discussion.
Thanks, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I was just going to ask, in our last call, we mentioned that there had already been surveys undertaken in the past. Is the figure of 100K taken from experience?
This is Steve. Yes, I was basing it on the survey that was contracted for the WHOIS review team.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
So I was arguing for consistency, that if we describe a survey's difficulty, we ought to describe it the same on page 7 as we do on page 10.
Steve, Cheryl here.
Go ahead.
I think to differ just on that. The survey back in Consumer Trust World is much more generic, if I can use that term in a limited way, because the survey questions are about, you know, what is trust, how do we measure it, blah, 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 and then you have to put the, you know, you've got to do those, establish what those questions are and then make sure they're meaningful and then get them out. Here, this question is simple. Do you own and still maintain the same domain name in a legacy TLD?
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, Cheryl. You're right. It's a lot simpler.
Bloody easy.
A lot simpler. Yeah. Well, what do you recommend we put in this particular?
Obtainable since. Use the same language as we have higher up in that part. It's obtainable and tell them how.
Namely,
and I'm actually indicating a difficulty.
Simple online.
So we're saying obtainable using SurveyMonkey, for example?
No, using either in-house or outsourced survey expertise and advice. Tools, expertise, advice. I said words earlier, but, you know, Barry can wordsmith. He knows what we're talking about. But this is one where this is actually a really simple one. The sort of thing that, you know, big pulse people would have already standard, you know, any of the big team people would have them, as well as Evan pointed out, you know, that AC Nielsen's already have their buckets of people that they contact on various things. That, you know, if you want it truly meaningful and global, it still can be done. It's almost, you know, no more than three questions.
Okay, so are you happy, Steve, that you can capture?
I'll try reading that back. The anticipated difficulty cell would read obtainable, comma, using either in-house or external survey tools and advice.
Yep, perfect.
Carol, while you're on a roll, what is the three-year target? The defensive registration should be less than blank.
Well, the X percent is what is the X, and we've got that issue higher as well. We talked last week and really didn't get very far on this particular point either. So I don't think I'm going to be on a roll on this one for you, because my personal view would be something in a 10 or 12% is fine, but other people might view that as far too high. We almost need to do a snapshot and see what defensive registration percentages are now in the legacy TLD.
Well, I just throw out a number. What about 20% for both of those X's? The defensive registration should be less than 20% of the total registration new space.
In 3 years, I think that's generously high, but I could certainly live with it. I'd be talking 12 to 15. But yep.
Olivier, do you want to comment on this or the earlier point?
Yes, Rosemary. Thank you. It's Olivier for the transcript. I was going to say having a number for this is particularly difficult. It's a little bit like taking a number out of a hat or throwing a dice and finding out what you get. If we are looking at I'm not quite sure if we can have a snapshot of what there is today and a snapshot 3 years from now, or a yearly snapshot, but we would like probably to see a reduction in the percentage of defensive registrations. That said, of course, this is skewed because at launch time, there might well be a huge batch of defensive registrations that comes through, and that will afterwards, there'll be less growth in the defensive registration. So it's a tough one.
I would hesitate to compare it as the answer is varies put in. Right, and a trend is only part of the answer, and we can have a declining trend in the news, but I don't think it's possible to compare it to the legacy TLD space today. I don't see how one could do a snapshot of today's GTLD space and capture the same equivalent statistics. Do you think it's doable?
I don't think there's the time to do the snapshot now. So let's pick a number. I say 12, you say 20.
Yeah, Rosemary here, part of the issue for me in actually putting in a number, and I know why we want to do that, is that I'm worried that the whole discussion will then focus on whether the number should be 15 or 17 or 2.
Then we've won. Then we've come up with a measure about which the community can debate what it is, and that's just fine.
Yeah, hell yeah.
We'll have done a great thing.
No. We'll be debating the number and not the measure. That's my worry, Steve. That's my worry. I don't feel like stopping the train. If we want to agree on a number, then I'm happy to put the number in. But I suspect the focus will then go to the number. Anyway, so which number are we going to pick? What we had between 12 and 20, so 15?
Fine by me.
I love it when you split the difference.
What else is there to do?
look, just stop the children arguing, Rosemary. That's the go. Go, girl.
Olivier, did you want to comment on the number?
Yes, Rosemary, it's Olivier here. Do we really need to put a number of this? Can we not just put as low as possible? Can we not say this as being a number we will find out with time? Because here, I'm afraid, I think we're not dealing with metrics anymore. What we're dealing with here are setting bounds for the metrics and saying, we want this to be 20%, we want this to be 12%. And I'm afraid the world doesn't go like this. It goes the other way around. You might wake up in the morning and say, I don't want it to rain, and it will, and there you go.
But we might say it should rain no more frequently than 50% of the time, and that would be our goal. It's only a goal to bound it on the...
Wishful thinking in the UK for it not to rain more than 50%.
But we may submit advice. This is only an advice letter to the board, and they may decide not to use our number, to use no number at all. It just strikes me that this is the time that people do take tiny risks like this, at being aspirational about what we think the new GTLD expansion is really all about.
So Olivier here...
We're trying to show that it is not all about defensive registrations. We're trying to show that whilst there will be, and we accept that there will be, a given amount, let's call it, 40% of the registrations in the sunrise period will be defensive. And then by year three, it should be... pick another number, and we've said 15.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by year three, with a declining trend.
John Barad in the chat has articulated my nervousness about this. What is the reality under the number we pick?
The current reality, Rosemary, is that there are sections of the community who think the majority of the registrations in new GTLDs will be defensive.
Yes,
now,
I know.
Now, majority is anything over 50%.
Yeah. Olivier, did you want to come in again on this?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. Cheryl is absolutely right. Some people do say that the number is going to be as high as that or even more. The problem I have with the number, and I guess, we have no choice. We do have to choose one. It is exactly what you've mentioned, Rosemary. People will just argue about the number and say, is it 12, is it 20, is it 30? Let's just pick whatever it is, 20 if you want, or 12 or 15, and we'll see at the end of the day, because if the number, the percentage of defensive registrations is indeed 60%, then we will obviously have seen that the metric is being grossly overpowered somehow. And we'll see in any case. I don't think it makes any difference whether it's 10, 15, 20, or 25, a quarter of them. There will always be people who will take this the wrong way, who will say, oh, so you're aiming for a quarter of your new GTLD applicants, or a quarter of new applicants in domain names to be defensive registrations. That converts to X number of millions of dollars, et cetera, and they'll take it against ICANN in any case. If you say 10%, they'll say we're absolutely loopy and we're just coming up with stupid numbers. So whatever it is, we'll be wrong. Thanks.
Okay, so we've got lots of comments in the chat which are thoughtful. I suggest we try and just this conversation and put a number in that column so that we can get back to the other measures that we need to discuss. And I will stick my neck out and say 15% and watch hands up or down or smiles on or off.
Remember, it's 15% of what it was at start-up of the program in 3 years.
Yes, so if there's 100%
of registrations are defensive, or 60% of registrations are defensive in Sunrise, and what we're talking about is a percentage of that in at the three-year target. Not that we are saying 15% of all registrations will be defensive is a good number. It's actually not talking about the number at 3 years being a target to reach, but rather that it is a measure of a declining trend at the three-year mark compared to the go-live time.
Yep.
Maybe so that needs to be explained more carefully and more articulately than I just did.
If we look at it, Cheryl, in the context of the three rows of measures and targets, we've got one for post-Sunrise, and then we've got defensive registrations less than X compared to, that's a question. And then this, and then we've got our survey. So those kind of things work together in my mind.
Yep. Yep.
To make the 15%, gosh, because
I think 15% fine. Make it to 10 if you want, but yeah.
All right. Shall we go with 15?
So the measure would say defensive registrations of less than 15%, and we would add a line saying should decline over time. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
All right, so we'll put that into this draft for both of those rows.
Okay.
If I heard that right, so that it's defensive registrations of less than 15%, and the next row says, sorry, that below that it would say, should decline over time.
Yes.
Great. So that is in there for both of them. The next row we already covered in the beginning of the call when we discussed geographical diversity.
Yeah.
And so why don't we get to competition measures? Rosemary, is that okay?
That's fine, Steve. We've got 55 minutes, but you assured us that if we spent time on those earlier measures, we'd be more efficient here.
Hold me to that promise, huh?
It's in the transcript.
This is only one page, page 11.
Okay.
And the first five measures in here are all quantities.
Yeah.
Relatively easy, except for the fourth one. But
yeah, why?
And we do have to come up with a why for X, for what the percentage it is. And if you recall, on last week's call, we did the first two rows. Total TLDs, we should be 2x over 2011. That's the total TLD space. And then we had split that row into two so that the second row is GTLDs. And given that we have 21 today, we ought to have over 200 by 3 years out, which would mean that something in the neighborhood of 180 of the new GTLDs survive for 3 years.
Yep.
So it's a 10x. It's an aspirational goal, 2x for totals. Mm-hmm. We're all good?
Yep.
Great.
Okay.
Third row gets the competition on with respect to registry operators. For instance, if Afilius, a registry operator, a PIR who operates .org, if they also operate .ngo and .ong and several others, then that isn't as much diversity as if they are brand new operators for the new TLDs. So this was easy to conceptualize, but it's very difficult to come up with a three-year target. Should we say there should be twice as many, like an increase of 2x over 2011 like we did in the first row? Be twice as many registry operators after expansion in 3 years out as there are today. Of the 21 GTLDs today, we have how many different registry operators for that? It's probably in the neighborhood of 15.
Yeah.
So a 2X would say we should have at least 30 registries. That's not very ambitious.
Well, it may not be ambitious, but it might be practical.
Yes, when you consider what needs to be done to establish a registry.
So would everybody be okay with a 2X over 2011?
At a three-year, yeah.
Yes. Any other?
And by the way, should this row, this is the third row we're all dealing with here, should it be quantity of unique GTLD registry operators? I don't think we mean all, so I should put GTLD there.
Yes, it does need to be GTLD.
Thank you. That's great. That's the third row. The fourth row is looking at, and I put it in italics, service providers, which is the company contracted to run the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with this several weeks ago as another potential measure of supplier competition.
Mm-hmm.
It's moderately difficult to obtain because, as Barry said last month, we will have to ask the registries who's running your back end. If it can't be determined from their paperwork or determined from other internal ICANN sources. Barry, you still feel that would be moderately difficult to obtain?
This is Barry. it won't be easy, I'll put it that way. It just really will depend on the forthcoming of the registry operators to provide that information. I don't believe there would be a contractual provision for them to do so. As it states today.
Is this something that's obtainable by looking at their applications? Will they indicate who their registry services provider is?
Yes, they do.
Yes, because they have to, denote their entire technical plan.
Correct. They have to, yep.
But after year three, that doesn't mean that they may change providers on the back end. And I'm not sure if we as ICANN would have to be privy to that or not.
Cheryl here, and there may be market forces that mean that there is, in fact, an aggregation for very good reasons.
All right, so we should leave it moderately difficult because it may be tougher to go check 3 years out and see who their current registry service provider is. We'd leave it moderately difficult to obtain. The source is still the same, ICANN and registry operators. But should we indicate an increase of, say, 2X, like we did above? Increase of 2X over 2011.
Do we know what the proportion is for here now, legacy?
I think Afilius runs 3, Neustar runs 3, VeriSign runs 2.
Okay.
And the rest I believe, have their own. So that was something in the neighborhood of 10, on the order of 10 back-end providers today. Barry, what do you think? I mean, you know this better than me.
Those numbers are roughly right. I haven't looked at them in a while, but it's about
basically what we're seeing is about if we look at the number of GTLDs sitting at 21, the number of service providers sits at 50% of that.
Well, that is simply an observation of today, but to be aspirational, we want more of these registry providers out there competing with each other.
Well, what we wouldn't want is a number less than 50%.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. It might be that 20 firms competing with each other to run back ends is plenty of price competition.
Right.
The sheer quantity is not the metric.
Okay.
The sufficient quantity so that Siemens and AT&T are competing with VeriSign and Afilias to run backends at a low cost, or Minds and Machines. It won't be difficult to meet a 2x number, but I don't think it makes sense to say that there should be half as many registry service providers as there are GTLDs. That's prescriptive. Well,
But you're talking an increase of
2x, which would mean that if we had 10 providers today, and that would have to be measured.
Yep.
And I'm sure that Barry could come up with that number in a heartbeat. If there are 10 registry service providers today, we would need 20 by 3 years out that are still surviving and in the business.
Well, I'm comfortable with that because that sort of fits with my mental model that I was doing on not having less than we do now, assuming at least a doubling of the field.
Well, this is Barry. Let's hypothetically say we get 500 applications for new GTLDs. What percentage of those are actually going to become their own provider? The rumor on the street is all of them are going to outsource their back end.
Right.
So, I haven't heard of any. There have been a couple of new startups like Open Registry, one or two others, but between now and 2013 and even 3 years out, is it really realistic that there's going to be a growth in that space if all of the 500 applicants already have back-end service providers?
Ask that last question again, the very final part.
Hypothetically, we have 500 applicants today, and let's say they all get delegated, and we're assuming that all of them are, 99.5% of them are going to outsource their back-end. They're going to outsource it to the providers that basically exist today. Is it realistic to think that 3+ years out, there's actually going to be growth in the back end space when all of the TLDs already have an existing provider?
Cheryl here. Under that hypothesis, then what we shouldn't see is a shrinkage.
Would be less competition.
That's right. We wouldn't want to see a shrinkage, but if we see an increase of any amount, that would be good. So it should be no less an increase, but no less than the existing number today.
Rosemary here, yes, and it's the whole philosophy of this work is about competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. So it seems to me that the focus of this is on outcomes for end users. So if we've got sufficient competition in back-end registry services now, we certainly wouldn't want to see less competition. But perhaps there isn't a driver for double the number in this particular part of the market.
And in fact, the end user probably doesn't, frankly, my dear, give a damn about the back end as long as it's stable, secure, and does what it says on the packet.
Yeah.
Does this argue for changing the three-year target to be at least as many unique providers as in 2011?
Yeah. No reduction over 2011 would be the...
And I believe Olivier has his hand.
Whoa, yex from Olivier. Whoa, okay. Ooh, what do you disagree with, mate?
Not only that, it's a red cross from Olivier.
Yeah, big red X. Whoa.
Okay, it's Olivier for the transcript. I think that, you know, whilst earlier we set a number which was somehow unrealistic of 15% of defensive registrations only, I would go along with setting a number which might be also completely out of the way by saying we would like to double the number of registry providers, back-end registry providers. The reason is as follows. If you have the same back-end for all of your new GTLDs, there will be the constraints in the business models of these new GTLDs will be a lot greater, because they will all be based on the same back-end provider. They will all be built in a way which is quite similar as what they've had today. So it completely closes the door on having new back-end providers that might have totally different types of charging or business models or contracts that they would have with their customers that would be the new GTLD registries. So I think we should really look at having an expansion in back-end registry providers, because I don't think that they're – and, okay, I don't think that keeping the same is something that is viable in an expanding market. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like we had an increase of 2X and against a target that says at least as many as in 2011.
I think I'm happy, Cheryl, here. I'm still happy with the at least as many, no reduction, obviously, at least as many, and increase would be positive, obviously. I disagree with you, Olivier, only because we're looking at a three-year target. And I think what we may see is by the time we're doing the next round, more opportunity, because a strong business case for service providers to create themselves as new businesses would be seen on the success of this current round. Where I wouldn't be surprised if at the three-year mark we may have one, two, perhaps three or four entrants, but not a marked increase, not a doubling.
If I may say, it sounds to me like we're basically saying it's okay for a monopoly or a multiple monopoly to be in place.
No, I'm saying that the
in most markets, two or three choices are
important.
Quite monopoly, right? Two or three choices. We have at least 10 today.
Yeah.
So there's no discussion of monopoly here.
Ten is not a bad number. Don't drop it to 9 and expand it to 12 if you want to. I mean, you know, and then 200 in 5 or 10 years' time. That's fine. You may get an exponential growth at some point when the business case is such that the considerable cost of putting the equipment together to make a successful registry is there. I'm just not sure I'm going to see that at year 3.
If I look at a service provided all over the world today, it's edge content caching. And I believe there are fewer than 10 providers globally of that particular service, but it's highly competitive with respect to pricing.
Huh? Rosemary, here, do we have to put in a number here? Could we not go with a measure that said expansion over 211?
Expansion is what Cheryl indicated, right? At least as many as in 2011. So that's an undefined expansion or a non-reduction. The VA had suggested aiming higher. What do you think the consensus here is, Rosemary?
If I may save you, Rosemary, I'm okay with expansion. I think if we can say at least as many, but hopefully more, that would be good. If we just say at least as many, I think it provides too much of a green light for keeping to the same number.
An expansion on the number in 2011.
Yeah, we could say the word expansion.
Yep.
Compared to expansion of unique service providers as compared to 2011.
Yep. Yes. As opposed to increase of a percentage over. Yep. Fair enough.
Yes.
Done.
Okay.
Still moderately difficult to obtain because one has to dive into the 3 years out. You have to dive into the registries and ask them, who's your current service provider?
Yep.
And I heard somebody mention the word consolidation. It was probably Olivier earlier. So I will change the description of this measure to say the quantity of unique registry service providers before and after expansion.
Yeah, good.
The next row is registrars, of which we have some 800 today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we need any more. Maybe the right part of the world is to have fewer registrars. I don't know.
Rosemary here. Steve, I was just thinking in the earlier discussion, and perhaps this is an action on Barry, that in all of these, where we do know what the current position is, we should put the number in somewhere or another, because it does make a difference. If you know that there are only two of something now and you're looking for improvement, then you want to go from two to four. But if you know that there's 800 of something in a market now, then you're not quite so exercised about getting from 800 to 1600, I don't think.
It's a great idea. And Barry, could I ask you to quickly check the number of unique service providers, the number of operators, and the number of registrars at the beginning of 2012. And then email around. You can dig it up. Fantastic. Thank you. And we'll put it parens after the 2011. On each of
that could be bracketed in that target box each time.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks.
What do you say about registrars? And let's tap into the knowledge we have on the phone here.
Can I just say all we need to do is measure it? We don't need to give it a target. It simply needs to be measured. Whether it's up or down, I'm not particularly fussed over, but we do need to compare between current and in 3 years. So I'd simply do the measure.
Well, that we would affirmatively say in the three-year target, say, no target, just measure.
Just the
is that
measure.
Is correct?
Yep.
So the word no target would really get people's attention. John Berard, you're with us. What do you think of that? No target for increase or decrease when it comes to the number of registrars.
So we're okay not sort of suggesting how people should think. Just sort of leave the
Well, we're being a little bit more assertive by saying that we do not believe that there has to be a target, either up or down.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to seeing whether the quantity of registrars affects competition.
It's literally a comparison. So it'll be in the three-year target, it'll say no target, comparative measure between 2011, which is then a bracketed number that Barry's going to pop in, and 2015 at 3 years.
Olivia has got his hand up.
Yes, Rosemary, thank you. It's Olivia for the transcript. I believe that at the moment it's fairly easy to find out the geographic location of those registrars, where they are located. And if we could, as we say, track this and certainly have a pie chart afterwards to show whether there's an increase of registrars in developing countries and in non-Western, so, you know, non-Europe and U.S. Locations, that might be something we would like to track.
Yep.
Bring the registrars closer to their markets.
So that would say that under the measure, it would say quantity of registrars before and after expansion with indication of the country in which they're based.
Yep. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
And next to the target, three-year target is no target given, compare to 2011, and put the number in.
Yep.
When ICANN was formed, one of the very early mandates it had was to increase competition in the registrar space. Network Solution was the only registrar for COM names, and competition really meant creating multiple registrars that could sell .com names. So the legacy of ICANN was that competition was giving registrants choices among multiple places to buy what in effect was the same thing. So at 800 today, if that's the right number, we're not making a value judgment about whether there needs to be more or less when it comes to deciding whether there's competition.
Could we say, though, it's Olivier for the transcript, could we say that we would like to see an increase in developing markets?
I don't believe that is an appropriately scoped measure of competition for this group. Because that's a contract party, and I don't really understand how that is part of our scope.
But if we do what Olivier says with the current measure, and we put up a pretty little pie chart that shows the current geolocation, then it's almost and the target box is talking about comparison. Then it is strongly suggesting that should this measure be used, it is used inclusive of that geolocality data as well, surely.
Did we not, when we were discussing geographic diversity earlier,
These were registrars,
though.
And because we only care about, as a consumer, we only care about users and registrars. And let me just scope this out. We have 30 minutes, and we have 7 rows to get through.
Yeah. And we're going to do it.
Yep.
So unless someone really wants to die in a ditch, then we're just having no target for registrars. I'm looking for hands.
Comparative measure.
Next one, Steve.
I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is the percentage of new registrations that are in GTLDs operated by new entrants. And the word new entrant is a new concept here. A new entrant is the GTLD registry operator who didn't operate any registries in 2011. Is Minds and Machines, for instance, running any registries today? I don't think so. And they would be an example of one that is new. So it would mean going through the zone 3 years out, counting up the number of registrations by TLD, and looking up to see whether that TLD operator was a TLD operator in 2011. If they were not, then they are a new entrant by definition, and we tally up the number of their registrations compared to the total. So I think I could take out the word... Actually, if you look at this, we have new on one row and all on the next row, because I don't know which of these two to use, and I can't remember why we have both of these. I don't think we need both of these.
Was it that point that we're wanting a base that includes the GTLDs and the CCs?
No, I mean, this may harken back to the time when we were trying to focus on defensive registration.
Which, as you say, we've captured earlier. So why don't we just focus on the new registrations?
Well, it would be, if we say...
Uh-huh.
If we just went to the second row, it'd be the percentage of registrations.
Yep.
That are in new GTLDs operated by new entrants. And I guess I would italicize new entrants because that's the key phrase.
And that's really what we want, isn't it?
I think so. It's been a while. And so under that scenario, we would actually consolidate these to one row that said percentage of registrations.
Mm-hmm.
I would scratch out after 2011 because by definition it's going to be measured 3 years out. Percentage of registrations that are in new GTLDs operated by new entrants, which I would put in italics, and then I guess I should put underneath that, i.e., registry operators who were not running a legacy, who were not in place in 2011.
Barry, did you want to remind us of something? I've noticed your contributions in the chat here.
Thank you, Rosemary. This is Barry. I was just high pointing out that the reason why both of these are showing up is what was pulled out of our presentation back in Dakar, and the main bullet item was to evaluate market share of those suppliers before and after launch of new GTLDs. First bullet being the new entrant share of new registrations, the second one being new entrants among all registrations, including existing registrations.
Oh, I got it. So it's whether the denominator included all the zones as opposed to just the new zones.
Yeah.
Oh, that's much easier. It may still be meaningful. It's very easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're really the same number. The numerator in both is the numerator in both percentages is the quantity of registrations at the end of year three that are run by GTLDs that are run by new entrants.
Yes.
Let's suppose that was 100 million in the numerator. That's the same numerator.
Mm-hmm.
The question here is whether we want to measure that denominator to be the total registrations in all GTLDs or just the total registrations in the new TLD space. So if we had 200 million new registrations in the new zones and half of them were by new entrants, it'd be 100 over 200 million or 50%. If, however, the denominator included all the zones, the number would be a lot lower. By focusing only on the new, we can set a higher goal.
Yes, but focusing on the total market gives us that snapshot of how much difference all this has made.
That's right.
Yeah. So the new one, Steve, we're saying it's easy to obtain those. At the minute, we've said it's difficult to obtain them.
Yeah, I believe that if we use the zone information,
yes,
3 years out, Barry, correct me if I'm wrong, but you walk the zones of the quote-unquote new GTLDs that weren't in existence in 2011, and you tally up the number of registrations in each, and you get the numerator, period.
Mm-hmm.
You only want to count that for the GTLDs that are new entrants, so you have to go through and eliminate the new entrant GTLDs,
yes,
and you get your numerator.
Yeah.
I think the zones would be, new registry zones would be your source.
Yeah.
So let's try to standardize on one of the two measures.
Yeah.
Which is, what is the new entrant's share of either just the new domain space or the new entrant's share of the total domain space?
Mm-hmm. New entrant share of the new. Well, what we're trying to do here is create competition and choice for consumers. So we want to know about the number of new entrants, and we want to know about the number of new registrations. But if we don't have the second measure, Steve, then we lose the impact of the whole program in the total market for domain names.
Well, that impact is still there in terms of consumers having choice, et cetera. I guess there's such a huge installed base of domains today amongst the dozen operators in the 21 GTLDs. That's water over the bridge. It's almost not important to have that denominator in the number.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'm happy to take that point.
You know, it's a sunk cost. So I believe we're better off focusing on, of all the registrations in the new GTLDs, setting aside any concept of whether they're defensive, that's not even part of this, of all the registrations in the new TLDs, what share of those registrations are held by
new entrants?
GTLD operators who are new entrants to the marketplace.
Okay, I'm happy to focus on that. Are there other thoughts on this? And I'm not sure what that symbol next to Cheryl's name is telling me.
That means that she stepped away for a moment.
Thank you, Barry. Okay, so we can lose a row. The suggestion is we lose the last row in this section.
Yeah, we consolidate them into one row, and it would read percentage of registrations in new GTLDs operated by new entrants, that is, not operating a GTLD in 2011. The source would be the new registry zone file.
Yes.
I don't see it as being difficult, so I would say none noted.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, what's the target?
Well, I'm certainly stumped on this one. What would we want to be the target? Because it's the percentage of new registrations operated by new entrants.
Greater than 20%, something like that.
Well, why don't we go with that? See what the feedback is. It's just difficult because we're still so new. To go back to John Berard's point, there's no base for understanding what these numbers should look like. So
I know, but just putting an X in, we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that we were done, right?
Yeah. No, that's right. So let's put 20% in and see what feedback we get on that, unless there are strong views from the participants on the call. Not seeing any. Okay. Go with 20. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we only have 20 minutes, and the next four items have to do with the prices paid by the registrant.
Yes.
First two, wholesale and versus retail.
Yes.
And the very, very final one is something everybody's talking about, is what does it cost to permanently block?
Mm-hmm.
Because ICM is doing it did it in their Sunrise and got a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take the first two, which is the wholesale and retail prices. Barry noted after much research that we would not be able to compel wholesale prices from registries. Barry, is that correct? What was our pricing problem?
Basically the response from legal is that their main concern was regarding the consideration of price-related information, whether publicly available or not, is the possibility that the outcome of a future review results in price-related recommendations. And to that extent, any consideration of price-related recommendations is not recommended, as it would raise both legal and accountability issues. ICANN does not wish to encourage the creation of recommendations that are legally not feasible to implement. And there was one other thing that was of note.
Barry, I would add that none of the goals set for the program are legally enforceable. None of them. So that same objection from legal would wipe out everything here. None of these are ever legally enforceable. They are aspirational for the program.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't easy to get the legal department to see it that way, but given that we're not trying to regulate prices, it's a matter of measuring what turned out after the fact and say, do we have a way of assessing whether that's evidence of competition or not? I'm sorry, go ahead. Did you have, and was there an issue on obtainability as opposed to legal advisability?
The obtainability I don't think is as difficult other than throwing man hours and money after it. But there isn't an automated way to necessarily go collect retail price data, not to say that it couldn't be done manually. As for wholesale pricing, I haven't looked at this on myself, but it seems like there is that information is available out there in one regard or another, maybe not for all of the TLDs. So I don't think that it's overly difficult to go get it outside of just pricing and man hours.
Rosemary here. I guess if we go back to basics, what we're talking about is competition in the context of competition, consumer trust and consumer choice. And the assessment of the competitiveness of a market often takes people to what's happening to prices in this market. That's where this whole issue comes from. I'm going to suggest that we've captured the issue well, wholesale prices, retail prices, sunrise prices, premium and non-premium. We've identified the source of the data. We've identified that it's difficult to obtain for a range of reasons. And I even think the measure reflects what consumers would be expecting to happen to prices in this market over 3 years. Bearing in mind that what we're doing is preparing a draft letter of advice, and at the moment we're focused on that going out to public comment, I just wonder whether we've actually got as much as we need to have in this whole area, and that we should just go for public comment. During that phase, people will come back and tell us it's just impossible to get this, or they're not prepared to do it, or it's legally this, that, or the other. But our task is to just make sure that we've got clear measures, well-defined, and we're identifying the difficulty of the task for people. I'm just wondering whether we've actually got enough to do what our task is, which is to send this draft advice for public comment at the moment. Any comments on that?
Steve, please. Yeah, I would say let's not give up too easily. I agree with you that we want to let others comment on it, but let's put our best thinking about this. Jonathan Zook sent a note around today, correctly, I think, pointing out that community-based TLDs or highly restrictive TLDs, like a dot bank, a dot NYC, which might be restricted to those who have New York City addresses, those smaller targeted GTLDs are not available to the general public. They have much smaller communities that they serve, and their value proposition may be such that their prices are higher. Certainly higher than maybe the $3 that .info charges today or the $9 that .com charges today. But there is value associated with being in a special purpose TLD as opposed to a general purpose TLD that's open to the global public. Mm-hmm. I think that by us assuming that if the price is higher, we have somehow failed to deliver competition, we will have done a disservice to this whole project. So if we are going to keep these rows in here, I think we have to cabin them only to TLDs that are open to the general public, at least the first two rows. Mm-hmm. Things like a dot web, which I'm pretty sure we're going to have, you could compare that to prices in legacy TLDs. But dot bank, if it's only available to chartered banks regulated by their respective national government, whatever that price is completely irrelevant to measuring whether there's now competition in the provision of appropriate TLDs to a bank. In other words, the program could have been a huge success at coming up with special purpose TLDs for different industries, geographies, and communities, but that balkanization of the space, that specialization of the space could well cause higher prices. Mm-hmm. And we will have reached the exact opposite conclusion if we claim that the goal was, on average, lower prices. So I would either argue for removal of the price rows. I actually thought that's the way this group would go after so many discussions of price. But if we kept them, Rosemary, my answer to you would be to restrict them only to the GTLDs that are available to the general public.
Well, it was interesting, Steve, because I was actually going to go back and remind everybody that my first position on this was that I thought it was too difficult to say anything about price. And one of the reasons is the reason you've just identified, you know, what you're, if people put a value on the particular characteristics of a domain name and they're prepared to pay $1,000 a year for it, then that's their choice. The issue is having a, you know, a number of different domain names with different characteristics in the market provided by different people who, you know, provide different levels of service and the like. So as long as you've got the supply side sorted out and consumers being able to make a range of choices, then you've got competitive outcomes. My second issue with all of this is just the difficulty of getting the prices. Having watched this process conducted by the competition regulator, well, competition regulators in a number of countries, including the European Union, over many years in the telco space, you absolutely wind up comparing apples and oranges and not getting any value for hundreds of hours of work. And then beyond that, pardon me, there's the difficulty Berry's identifying that, pardon me, once you put prices into the market, what's the impact of that on competitive conduct? So I'm all for removing these price lines. Cheryl has got a tick, but I'm not sure she's agreeing with me. Yes, in the chat line there's a ditch the line. Evan, on the other hand, has got a big red cross. So, Evan, would you like to come in and just explain what you're thinking?
Yeah, personally, I think that taking out price lines is a bit of, I don't have a better way to say this, but head in the sand mentality. In the sense that when you're talking from the point of view of people who are looking to get TLDs, much of the problem that exists with the current regime is a matter of artificial scarcity. And very often when I heard the rationale given for having new GTLDs, it was to decrease the amount of artificial scarcity. If it is reducing scarcity, then it should also along with that, if there's a truly competitive environment, be reducing the costs. Are there going to be a handful of high service, high cost, high value TLDs like .bank? Absolutely. But the fact that a TLD is going to come around and say, "Okay, I'm going to offer names because the first 15 that you looked for you couldn't find, but I'm going to offer you a new alternative." You know, I can tell you 100% of the times I've helped people get registrations, this has always been a matter of scarcity. This has been a matter of people being able to find what they want. And the fact that we have so many speculative domain registrations, the fact that, like, it seems, and this is purely based on my own anecdotal observation, but I had a look through .co, and fully half of the sites that I went to just at random were park pages. So you have situations where there is artificial scarcity going on. And I believe that cost isn't the only issue, but to remove it as if it's not a factor, I think basically just essentially devalues this entire report in the eyes of people that are looking for a healthy overall evaluation of things. By all means, make it clear this isn't the only factor, but to say that it's not a factor at all, I believe has a component of willful oblivion in it, and I'll leave it at that.
Cheryl, I just see that as an argument for why we should be measuring. If we measure it, we measure like with like and limit it to open public ability to register in TLDs.
And
I fully agree, Cheryl.
Look at the expensive ones. Now, if we're going to look at that, then I'm fine with it. If we're not going to look at that, then I want to ditch it.
Cheryl, if I could support you on that, it would need to be only public. And keep in mind that when Evan saw parked pages in CO, and CO is a ccTLD, but it runs like a G and it's available to the general public, they allowed premium pricing. They charge different prices for generic words that get parked than for other words. And all of the new gTLDs, even those open to the general public, will be allowed to do the same thing. Observe what they think are high-value generic words, set them at very high prices, park them for a while to see if they generate traffic. So it's difficult, even within the .web new gTLD, to say what is the average price. There will be some premium names for thousands of dollars, and there may be general dictionary terms and other specific terms that might be $10 or $20 a name. This is a very challenging, and it's just as much putting our head in the sand to assume that our measure will be meaningful. So we don't want to ignore it, but let's make sure we caveat what it is we're measuring. The caveats themselves are less important if we fail to set a target. If, in fact, we made this a no target, just measure and compare, we can be a little sloppier about how we define the metric.
I'm okay with that. I'm just saying the idea of just nuking the lines and pretend that price isn't an issue is in my mind foolhardy. And I'm totally okay with the idea of saying, yeah, we know there's going to be value add. Yes, there's going to be ones that are going to have reason to be more expensive. But on the whole, if there is a metric that says that the release of the new gTLD program has led to an average increase in TLD in second-level domain prices, that's something people need to be aware of, whether or not it's something that people want to be known.
So, Evan, would you support on the first two rows, the wholesale and retail price of domains, where we added the phrase
publicly available,
offered for gTLDs open to general public,
yeah,
each of them, and then at the end, under three-year target, say the word no target, compare.
I would even be happy with a line that says diversity of high value versus low cost. You know, the fact that you have a marketplace that has both a British Airways and a Ryanair indicates healthy competition. That doesn't mean that you say cost isn't a factor. There's a demand for both. But you can't say cost isn't a factor.
Nor can we say that an evidence of a different price between those two is evidence of lack of competition. So the pricing differences will reflect other things, scarcity and value,
yes,
to your words earlier. So therefore, we can't conclude anything a priori about what the difference in prices mean, but we do think it's important to measure it.
I agree with what you were saying about publicly available ones. If the ones that are not closed off are added value, if the average price of those ends up increasing, that says something about the public point of view of the success of the program.
Okay, we've got about 5 minutes, everybody.
You asked.
No, it's great. And I appreciate the email you circulated today after Jonathan Zook's note. That's helpful. Rosemary, if I may quickly say that the two sunrise rows below this, I put those in many weeks ago. And when we focus ourselves on three-year targets, these are pretty meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
The sunrise period will happen for the first 30 days of a new gTLD launch. That'll all be over roughly a year into the new expansion.
Yeah.
And when I brought up premium and non-premium in there, those were my words to sort of distinguish between what they were charging. I realize there's no obligation for a new operator to have just two flavors, premium and non. They may have multiple flavors. So as the author of those rows, I feel as if when you focus on a three-year target, we probably want to get rid of those on sunrise pricing.
So both of those categories would go, those rows would go, Steve?
That would be my recommendation,
okay,
having put them in there. But I'm anxious to hear what other people think. I'm looking to move things along. As you said, we only have a few minutes left.
Indeed. Well, while other people are thinking about that, Olivier wants to come in to the conversation.
Thank you, Rosemary, and I hope I'm not setting you back by still talking. Well, I've been waiting patiently for the retail price of domains. Clearly, we have two markets, and the premium market is the one which, if there is more competition, might have lower prices for the premium domains. I'm talking specifically of the ones that go for $100,000 or $1 million, which you sometimes hear about in the press. And I just wonder if there would be less of these really, really premium domains if there was a lot more real estate out there. But that ties in with what's been said there. I just thought I just mentioned that for the record. Thanks.
Thanks, Olivia. So I think we've got agreement, Steve, to remove those sunrise price lines. There's a little in the chat that you might want to think about. Now, this last row, I'm not sure where this came from, and we've only got a couple of minutes to deal with this.
I added it because of all the talk of ICM and their sunrise block option. I'm aware that the trademark guys are hoping that many of GTLD operators will offer this permanent block cost during sunrise. This is rather specific, and I'm happy to withdraw it if there's not wider support.
Anyone wanting to comment on that?
Olivier again.
Thank you. It's Olivier for the transcript. The block option is something which has been extensively criticized outside of ICANN's walls as being some kind of protection racket, if you want. And I'm not quite sure whether we wish to be to monitor this. I mean, what would it have to be effectively monitoring it and saying the cost should be such and such less than annual registration fees? Are we not actually giving a green light to this to happen? And I just wonder whether this is the right way forward. I'm not quite sure we should be so proud as to something like that happening. Thank you.
So I think I'm hearing agreement for this row also to be removed. Evan?
I just put in the chat that, at least from my evaluation, a sunrise block is sort of the same thing as a defensive registration at reduced price. So I don't know if it's part of competition issues, but it definitely has to be part of any discussion about defensive registrations, because having this in is an acknowledgement that defensive registrations are happening, and this is essentially just a way to soften the blow by reducing the price of them. You know, if you're going to buy a domain but have no intent of using it, well, we'll just block it at a reduced price.
That's a good point. So back on the choice where I indicated measures of registrations having the same domain and other TLDs, I would say that I need to add to there, we should count blocked domains the same way as the defensive. Is that correct?
Well, that's just my point of view on this. I see them as two sides of the same coin.
Right. They're even more defensive in the sense that the registrant doesn't even want them to resolve.
Yep.
So I could add the word the blocked registration to the two rows on page 10 where we measure the number of quote-unquote defensive registrations.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, well, let's do that way.
And then that gets rid of that line.
That's right. So then we've got Barry's suggestion that if we include prices, which we are going to, wholesale and retail, that we attach the perspective from ICANN Legal as Appendix B to the document we issue for public comment. Is everyone okay with that?
Yes.
If it's going to
be... Rosemary, I was writing and I didn't quite hear what that request was, so if it's approved, make sure you repeat it for me.
Yes, certainly. The Barry's suggestion is that if we include, which we are, two rows on pricing, that we include in our document ICANN Legal's opinion or issues, their response around the inclusion of pricing metrics in a draft letter of advice. And I'm inclined to agree with that, because if there is a significant issue, we need to call it out for consideration by the community as early as possible, really.
Great. I'm happy to do that. I would ask Barry to craft that paragraph and send it over, and I'll plug it in.
Okay. Well, everybody, congratulations, because that brings us to the end of our task. Well done, small clap. Our next call, I guess, starts now to bring together a presentation. If you go back to the schedule under our open items, open action items. Barry, you're wanting to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to state that our next meeting will be scheduled for next Tuesday on the 21st. And yes, to what you were stating, to start on the presentation, and I'm guessing between now and then, Steve will release the next version in the next day or two, and that we complete any other changes pretty much on the list, so that we can start to prepare for Costa Rica. And one of my action items will be to basically develop a template of a presentation for us to review at our next meeting. And I'll start with what we used in Dakar and then fold in basically the output from our advice letter into some sort of PowerPoint deck.
Makes sense. Barry, this is Steve. We were anticipating publishing for public comment on the 21st of February. Would that mean that next Tuesday we finalize the document, or you prefer that we finalize the document via email in the next few days?
This varies. That's to the working group overall. If we want to wait till the 28th to go to public comment so that we just make sure that we've got all of our bases covered again, we can go either way.
But, I mean, if we're having a call next Tuesday the 21st, on that call we could literally make any last-minute tweaks to the doc, and on that call hand it to you for publication on the 21st.
Yeah. Sounds good.
That's the way to go. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier. Will we be discussing Evan's added paragraph in our next call?
Sorry, Olivier. Would you mind just clarifying that a little?
Evan sent a copy of the document over to, I believe, the list. Evan, maybe you can take it.
Actually, what happened is I had sent an early copy to a few people, and then I'd sent it also to Steve, who incorporated it. It is actually into 5.1.
Oh, it's already in there. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And then in today's note, I pasted it in for everyone to see it.
Yep. So, Rosemary, just to finalize, so we will have one last look at our document as part of our next call. We'll focus on preparing the presentation for Costa Rica in that call. John Barad has made the suggestion that we road test our presentation with a wider group. So if all of us could think about a couple of people, extra people, to encourage perhaps to join our call on the 6th of March, I think, is the next one, so that we could do that. I think that's a really great idea. Okay, I think that's it. So thank you, everybody, for a fantastic piece of work this morning, this evening, this afternoon. And we'll chat next week.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, Rosemary. This is Steve. When I send around V6, I'll indicate in the email to our list that our intent is to publish this on the 21st. So this is a last call.
Yep.
Terrific, Steve. That's great.
Thanks so
much. By the way, it's excellent.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Rosemary. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, all.